Good evening, one and all. I was surprised when I looked at the calendar just now. We're still in March. March seems to be going on for ages. I don't know. I think it's one of these sort of 5 week months or something like that. But it seems to be going on for ages. And I think part of it's because the clocks, of course, went forward in America about 3 weeks ago, something like that. And they don't go forward in England until this weekend, which is also Mother's Day. Don't start me on that Hallmark invention that they moved into America. It's been around for 1,000 years, Mother's Day, Mother Earth, Mother Church. And the true story this, I'll add this before my guest is laughing in the background, but I will tell you this true story. A lady approached Hallmark in America in the late 1800s, I think it was, and she wanted to try and bring Mothering Sunday or Mother's Day into America. And Hallmark said, "Well, when is it in England?" And she said, "I think it's the last Sunday in March." And Hallmark said, "Oh, I don't know, it's a little bit close to Easter. What other dates did you go?" Well, she said, "My mother's birthday was such and such a date." And they said, "Okay, that sounds good. We'll move it to there." So basically, it's a Hallmark invention for something that's been around for over 1,000 years. But never mind. I am here, and so is my guest. I do this comedy type thing I'm getting into these days, like a open mic thing where I do some jokes and then one of my song parodies and stuff like that. And I seem to be telling jokes nearly all the time now. Well, not according to my wife. I seem to be irritating her all the time. She won't say that. Anyway, my guest today, Sarah Winokur, and I hope I said that right. She is a geneticist turned author. Can you work that out? Okay, we better ask her, right? Because as I say, on the show today, the one and only Sarah Winokur. Hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. Sounds like you're doing well too.
I was until the ambulance just went by. What else? The phone's going to ring now. We just happen to live on the way
Oh,
up to
well.
live on the road up to the hospital, so it's
Oh,
normally
yes,
it's not too
well.
bad, but I think there was two of them there. That's why it was there. Anyway,
At
good
least you're
to
not in it, you know.
exactly,
That'd be worse.
exactly. That's what I say. People say, "How are you?" I say, "Well, I woke up this morning. That's a plus."
Yeah. Above ground,
Exactly.
that's good.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. As I said, you are well, you've sort of done quite a bit on the genetic side, DNA and all that. Is that something that, has that been your job, your speciality?
That's right. I essentially was a scientist, a genetics researcher for about 25 years at the University of California. We studied various human genetic diseases, such as Huntington's
Yeah,
disease
I
and
saw that.
muscular
Yeah.
dystrophy. Yeah, so a lot of DNA work. And after my first career there, I decided to switch gears and start writing fiction. Just, well, it turns out it's quite different than writing scientific articles.
I guess it might. But it's great. I mean, obviously, DNA has become hugely part of not only our life, but law and order and everything like that. Did you, when you came to think, I'm going to write something, write a fiction novel, obviously that was your background. Was it a no-brainer that you'd sort of have something like that into your first novel there?
Yeah, so I do write they're historical fiction murder mysteries. And
Okay.
I always knew that I wanted to incorporate genetics in a very light way as part of the mystery. Now, you do not need to be familiar with genetics at all to really get into the mystery and how DNA plays a role. It's really a very small part of the book, but I hope that the reader will gain some kind of understanding of genetics through reading the book in a hopefully entertaining way. I always like to learn something when I read.
I totally agree with you on that. We have so many of these people come along and we have books about abuse and obviously illnesses and stuff like that. And I always think it's a lot better if you put it into a novel and people are reading it, they are putting themselves into the character, into the main character, that they can relate to that, rather than the sort of nine ways of doing something or other type books, which is hard for somebody to read.
That. Entirely different readership, that's right.
Yeah. Now, your first book, Double Blind, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of Icelandic issues in that, is there, or something like that? I know you bring in something along those lines.
That's right. So both of my books, Double Blind, which came out in 2020, and now Ivory Bones, which just came out in February, are set in Iceland. There were two reasons why I chose Iceland. And the first is that they have a national, it's actually a company, but they have collected DNA from the majority of their citizens.
Yeah.
So they're using this database to sort of tease out what genes are involved in common diseases like heart attacks and diabetes and cancer and so forth. So they're doing a lot of good with it, too. But it's also quite controversial, as you might imagine.
Right.
So I sort of touch on both aspects of that. And then I went to Iceland to tour this company. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I took a trip around the rest of the country too, and I just became really enamored with not only the landscapes and the culture and all their very quirky foods and so forth. And I just thought, this is a great place to set a murder mystery, because you just dump, you come across one remote farmstead after another, and it's sort of an eerie landscape, but it's also quite beautiful. So.
I remember watching, you say about the sort of weirdness there. I remember watching the Icelandic Olympics, and they have things like dangling weights from your ears, I remember, and stuff. Weight lifting with your ears.
Right.
You know?
Now that I didn't know about.
Oh my goodness, yeah, they went for all this sort of shin kicking and
Yeah. I can see that.
but it is. It's a one. I mean, I'd never been there. I've been near it, flying, but sort of seen it in the distance. But I've never actually been there. But it's one of these places that is so different to any other place in the world. Not just the volcano part and everything, but it is. It's such a totally different place. And, of course, it has been touched or landed or what have you on by people throughout history. From the earliest days, sort of people found their way, to Iceland, blown off course wherever they were going, sort of thing. So the DNA of that on Iceland must be a very mixed DNA, I'd have thought.
Well, it is actually primarily originally from the British Isles and Ireland and Norway, because the first settlers were from Norway. And on their way there, they picked up a few, servants or women to sort of help them, settle the land.
In-flight entertainment,
And that was 1,000 years ago.
Right.
Since then, up until fairly recently, it's been quite isolated from the rest of the world. So it has a rather unique culture. In fact, the pool of DNA, the people, the DNA of one individual, there's only 350,000 people that live there. And they're really one giant family. They're very much related to one another, for the most part.
See, it's not just your book that's got this DNA and descendants thing, because you found out about something about yourself along the way, haven't you?
Well, yes. In this second book, Ivory Bones, it is a dual timeline historical fiction that also involved the murder. And having been to Iceland quite a number of times, I knew about this pirate raid on Iceland in 1627, when the Barbary pirates came from North Africa and took something like 400 villagers back to North Africa and sold them as slaves. So as it turns out, and I'm not particularly proud of this, but it turns out that I am a descendant of the mastermind of this pirate raid. So I am descended from a really quite famous pirate in North Africa. But, you know, that was 400 years ago. So
Just pass it by.
It's been diluted. The DNA's been diluted over time.
Right. I noticed, I'll tell you why in a minute, that your journey, you know, through this development of your fictional novels and stuff like that actually stems a little bit from your love of solving puzzles.
Absolutely. I think even from a young age, I've just always loved a puzzle. I love to put all the pieces together, whether it be, you know, jigsaw puzzle, crossword puzzle. I think that's probably one of the reasons that drew me to science to begin with, because that is a giant puzzle of the unknown as well. And I just like to kind of put the pieces together and solve sort of the mystery of things. And so, you know, it seems like a big leap to go from science to writing a mystery novel. But I think that's something that connects the two.
Yeah, I mean, I've had quite a few people who've, well, how can I say, you either get people who were lawyers, doctors, or scientists. Now, I reckon that the increase in the number of lawyers and doctors writing novels are because, of course, now with the computer, the laptop and stuff like that, people don't have to try and read the doctor's writing anymore. And the other one is the lawyers, of course, they're telling stories all the time. So they must be good. But there are an increasing number, and we've had several this year, I can think of just like that, of people on the science side of things. And what we find is that truth is stranger than fiction half the time, that they're writing stuff that's actually already happening, and people think it's, you know, it's fiction, but it's not.
That's right. I mean, there's certainly a lot of mysteries out there that remain to be investigated and solved.
Well, if you look, and this is what I said before on this, if you go back 15, 20 years, whatever, right, and you think of Star Trek. And Star Trek, we had all this stuff from the future and everything like that. Well, the first thing they had was a sliding door. Now, nearly every supermarket, every place like that's got a sliding door these days. Communicators, mobile phones, captain's log, tablet, you know. And we did. I've had somebody in the show that's going on about they are looking to use the transporter or a transporter system for transporting goods. You know, they're working on it. So it's not so far-fetched, all this stuff. Yeah.
No, that's right. And then, you know, those books like 1984, they're so, it seemed like it was so far in the future back then, but it's,
I was looking at one of the reasons why I asked about the puzzle thing is there is a new detective series on BBC TV that I saw this last week, and it's called a composer, Wolfgang, and it's got David.
Ludwig,
that's it.
I think I just saw that today. I mean, I didn't see the show, but I saw that.
I saw the first one because I like David Mitchell from Would I Lie to You and stuff like that. But I saw it, and that's based on this person's a puzzle expert, who's twin brother dies, and he has to take his place. But he's, everything's a puzzle to him.
Yeah, and I think he's an identical twin.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So he can. I think I'll watch that tonight.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, his identical
right up my
twin.
Alley.
Oh, it's his identical twins, like with the in the. Scotland Yard in the police thing, and he married the girl that the other one likes, and he does everything by a puzzle, sort of like elimination puzzle, and this puzzle,
Oh boy, it sounds great.
Oh, it's quite interesting. I think it's going to get better. I think. I mean, I've only seen the one episode because it only started last week, but yes. Anyway.
Yeah. I was reading the synopsis, and it did say that the main character is a quote unquote puzzle setter.
That's it. Yeah.
So I think that's just got to be a British term, a puzzle setter.
Yeah, he creates the times crosswords and stuff like that. So,
cool.
Anyway, we take the first book. Now, as you said, the new book that's out now touches on your Barbary. Pirate type
yes.
thing, but it also revolves a bit around some chessmen, doesn't it?
Yes. So there is a set of chess pieces called the Lewis Chessmen. Most of them are actually in the British Museum today, some in the National Museum of Scotland, mm-hmm. but they were carved in the 12th century of walrus ivory,
right.
and it's unknown as to exactly where they were carved, whether it be in Norway or in Iceland. So they were carved in the 12th century. They're very intricate. They have, they're not sort of your standard generic chess pieces. They have really almost comical human expressions, and they're just marvelous and extremely valuable each piece.
Yeah, I think I've seen them. Yeah, I definitely. Plus, of course, they're on the cover of your book. Duh, no wonder I've seen them somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. I did want to put them on the cover because they are just so, they're just so beautiful in their own way. And the fact that they were carved in the 12th century is amazing. So in my book, I have these Lewis Chessmen having been carved in Iceland, being passed down in generations to this woman in the 1600s who was taken captive as a slave of the Barbary pirates. So she takes with her the Lewis Chessmen, and on the journey, these chess pieces, part of their fleet gets shipwrecked and ends up on the Isle of Lewis in Scotland,
which is indeed where
the chess pieces were discovered in the 1800s. But the mystery in my book surrounds a few of these pieces, which are still, in reality, missing today. And each piece is worth $1 to $2 million.
Wow.
So there are a number of people looking for them in my book, at least.
Right.
And some of them are, shall we say, not entirely reputable people. They want them for, to sell on the black market or whatever, and they're willing to commit murder to find them.
Right.
So in the diary.
Yeah,
the
diary has, is like hidden clues, is it?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's another piece of the puzzle is this diary is, there is a diary that was written by one of these captives of the Barbary pirate raid. And this is the woman that had the Lewis Chessmen with her. And in that diary, she alludes to the three missing pieces and where she had left them behind in Iceland. So only by solving the clues in the diary can those chess pieces be found.
And is there any of the same people from the first book, or is it a total standalone, different book?
It certainly can be read as a standalone because, yes, it does. I do have many of the same characters carried on into this book, but it's an entirely different mystery. And the background of the protagonist, who is a forensic geneticist, is explained in the second book as well. So it can be read as a standalone.
Okay, you've got the two. You got a third. You got a third one coming along?
I have a third one brewing in my mind, and this one will carry on one of the characters from the first two books, and it will be now set in a mystery that takes place in Greenland, not in Iceland.
Yeah. Okay. If you can still get to Greenland, yeah. Yeah. Not red,
Yeah.
white, and blue
Yeah,
land,
yeah. Let's.
yeah.
Oh yeah. We won't go there.
Okay.
We will go there.
What sort of response, like we were talking about early on, about the sort of part of it's obviously the thriller and that, but there is some educational stuff on there. Have you had a response to that, that people said, I never realized that? It makes sense when you sort of look at it that
Oh,
way.
absolutely. Yeah, because I do tie in a lot of, a lot of aspects of Icelandic culture and the language and the foods and their traditions and the landscape itself. And many people have said that they, as they're reading, they can sort of visualize the story
Which is
as a
great,
film.
yeah.
Like they can like see it happening, which is very rewarding to me.
Yeah, oh no, that's it. I mean, that's what I say to people, that people can paint with words. So they're reading it and you're getting the visualization of the, like, exactly, the place and what it's like and stuff like that, which I think is a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two books, as I said, third one you're churning over and everything like that. Have you found, because obviously the whole DNA stuff changes as more, as we find out more and we go into it more and everything, have you sort of found that you're either behind the curve or you write something thinking it's fictional and by the time the book comes out or anything like that, it's you find it's not fictional anymore?
Are you referring to the genetics aspect of it?
Yeah, on the genetic side, yes. Sorry.
Oh no, I've sort of, I mean, not sort of, I have stayed up to date with what's happening in the world of genetics. And so those aspects that I allude to in the book, the little light, should we call it genetics 101 or just very light genetics, are actually techniques that are utilized today. So they're not sort of sci-fi in the future kinds
Okay.
of tech. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's been fascinating chatting to you, but time is going. So what I'm going to do now, Sarah, is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books. So over to you.
Okay, thank you. So I do have a website, and I'm going to spell my name because otherwise you'd never be able to find it. It's Sarah. It's Sarah Winoker, which is SARAWINOKUR.com. So there's no H in Sarah, and Winoker, sort of an odd name. So
Right.
at sarahwinoker.com, and there's a lot of information on there, not only about the books, but about like Icelandic culture and sort of tips on traveling to Iceland and so forth, and where to find the books, which is you really could find it at any independent bookstore. They may or may not have it on their shelf, but they can certainly order it. Through bookshop.org, for instance. It's on Amazon all over the place, like everything. Where else? So yeah, just basically anywhere there are also links to it on my website.
And the cover is easiest to spot people because he's got a load of chessmen on the
Yeah, I don't think you can. Yeah. That's
front. No,
right.
it's a bit more of that. It's a compass and maps. It's a very nice cover. I like that cover. And every
Thank
time
you.
I look
I
at,
did contact the British Museum to get permission to use that
yeah, because
photograph of the for the website.
that bishop in the middle is the one that
Yeah.
you often see used as an example, just the sort of smirky face on him in the middle there. And
Yeah.
but so I as soon as I saw that, I thought, I've seen that picture before somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Was that actually on the cover of an Agatha Christie novel?
Is that what it was? Ah, see, my
Huh?
brain works sometimes. Doesn't know why it's working, but it works sometimes. Anyway, it has been great chatting to you, Sarah. Thank you so much for
You
being a
got there.
guest on the show today. And good luck with the book. And perhaps when you get to the next one done, you'll come back and chat to us again.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, eh? Sarah Winoko. Winoukur. And Sarah without an H. Sara. Sarah last week was without an H, wasn't she? Yeah. Anyway, talking about her books, including her new book, which is called Ivory Bones, The Lewis Chessman Murders. Da-da-da. Looks great. Looks, sounds good. Lots, and I love these books where you learn. You learn, you pick up stuff. That's why I like doing this show. One of the reasons I like doing this show, apart from the fact you chat to all the people all the time, but I do like the odd little bits of, little thing you learn. The odd, like the quilts at G's Bend and the Three Rivers Flood and the this and the that and the fact that if you're on the moon, Australia is actually bigger than the surface area of the moon and all this sort of stuff. And so when you're looking down, you'd see that Australia is actually bigger than if you're looking up at the moon. But anyway, that sort of stuff. So yeah, sort of thing that you go in a pub and bore people with for 10 minutes. Yeah. Anyway, I won't be back tomorrow. It'll be a repeat tomorrow because I have a the town's open mic to do. Doing a spot there, so I'll be out tomorrow, but we'll have an old show, and then of course I'm back the weekend with my music. But until then, as always on this show, there's just one thing left to say. Don't forget.